Blog Talk Radio.
On this Friday morning, TGIF people, the weekend is upon us. Sometimes it's a little foggy, it's a little fuzzy long about Wednesday afternoon, but here we are and here you are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. Again, I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out. As always, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm loaded today. I don't know if I'm going to get this all in, but you know, sometimes it's good to have a little more than you need. But, again, like I said, the weekend is upon us. Hope everyone has some fabulous weekend plans going on. And you, of course, can call in here and talk to me. The number is 347-857-2620. Or you can go to the chat room, which, of course, is open, as always. Open for business. Anyway, let's get to it because, of course, I've got a ton of stuff to get to today. So, of course, the biggest thing going on right now, of course, is this horrific shooting, another school shooting in Oregon, and this took place yesterday late morning, at a small community college about 70 miles south of Eugene, Oregon. This happened at Umpqua Community College. It's a very small college in the small town of Roseburg, Oregon. And it's kind of the same thing. You have people here just going to school, just minding their own business. And the shooter has been identified. I'm only going to say his name once, and I don't feel comfortable doing that. But I think being that this is a news story and that people need to know the facts and they need to know about what happened, I will say his name once and then I'm not going to do it again. But the shooter in this case has been identified as Christopher Harper Mercer. And based on accounts of people who were there on the scene yesterday, how this all started, basically, is that really just kind of a random shot came through one of the school's windows and caught one of the teachers in the head. And so everybody's really kind of thinking, you know, at that initial point there, that this is really, really kind of random, that this nutcase, this nut job has picked this particular location, just, you know, picked a location out of his butt and just decided that this was the place he was going to wreak havoc. And, but we don't know yet. We don't, it's extremely early in the investigation and still at this hour, even the day after, very, very little is yet known. And it's the information is going to come out in the following days and weeks. And, but what we do know so far is that, again, there was a random shot fired into the window of one of the windows of the school, and this gunman burst in. And some other information that I have also seen is that this really kind of took place in just one classroom area of the school, and he ordered everyone to get on the ground initially. And then made them all stand up and state their religion. And if they were Christians, they were shot in the head. And if you were something other than a Christian, you were shot in the leg. And right now, I believe the death toll, the last one that I have seen, was there are 10 dead and 7 injured. That of course, could be very fluid, very changing. The report I have here from Fox News is that one person was still in the hospital in critical condition, and that's so far. That's what we know about the condition of the of the victims here. And you know, before I go any further, really, I probably need to include my own, you know, before we get into any other angles, any other aspects of this story that we need to remember. And it's another reason why we don't want to give the person responsible for this. We don't want to give them the credit that they were obviously seeking, because it happens all the time. It happens every time that something like this happens, that people say this person's name over and over and over, and he achieves the infamy that he was seeking at the time he committed this crime. But so before I get into anything else, because there's so many different things going on here, we do want to give out our thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families for what they are enduring, what they are going to continue to endure in the coming days and weeks and months, and basically their lives are changed forever for those who lost loved ones. And, you know, like I said, there's so many things here that you want to talk about. And I'll just go through here this report I have that was from this morning from Fox News that, of course, investigators, their FBI is on the scene, and a number of law enforcement agencies are combing through this guy's apartment to find any sort of evidence, any sort of clues as to motive or anything else about what could have prompted this. And so far, investigators have found what they are only calling, quote, a number of firearms in his apartment. This is according to the Douglas County Sheriff. I believe his name is John Hanlon. He says that the details on the number and types of weapons will be released sometime today. An official told the New York Times that the shooter had 3 weapons while he was committing this crime, including at least 1 long gun. Again, there has been very little light shed on any possible motive, at least publicly at this point. They have, of course, been examining this person's online social media presence very closely. One law enforcement official described this person, again, to the New York Times, as appearing to be, quote, an angry young man who is very filled with hate. Well, I think that's probably kind of a given at this point. Another official said investigators were poring over what he described as, quote, hateful writings by the shooter. Oregon's top federal prosecutor told the Oregonian newspaper that authorities had heard rumors that the gunman had issued some sort of race-related manifesto before the shooting. Well, and again, is there not always some sort of manifesto? These guys always seem to find the time in their psychotic ramblings and maneuverings. They always seem to find the time to write out their twisted thoughts and beliefs and opinions in a manifesto. Wouldn't it be nice if we all had the time to write a manifesto? But, you know, that's another topic, perhaps for another day. But, so there is a rumor that there are some writings and various other things that they have found in this guy's apartment. Again, when he burst into the classroom where this took place, he told the others, he told the students in the classroom to rise, to stand up and state their religion. Again, if they said they were Christians, they were shot in the head. If they were said they were something other than Christian, they were shot in the leg. And this is how I'm going to get into some of the other things that we're going to talk about with this. A report from the Daily Beast, take that for what it's worth, reported that a MySpace page bearing the shooter's name featured an image of him holding a gun, as well as some images of Irish Republican Army propaganda. The website also reported that he created an online dating profile that listed organized religion as one of his dislikes. The profile also described his political views as conservative and Republican. Let's all say it together now, shall we? And we're off. Here we go. Here we go with conservative and Republican. I'm sure the Tea Party, lists of people who have attended Tea Parties and other conservative gatherings, I'm sure they're being closely poured over by the mainstream media, because where else would a shooter? They've just been waiting for this. They've just been waiting for somebody to actually come out and state their views as being conservative to have committed one of these crimes. They've been chomping at the bit, and now I'm sure they all can hardly contain themselves. But the New York Post has identified a dating website as spiritualpassions.com and reported that the shooter used a screen name, quote, Iron Cross 45, which is a possible reference to a World War II decoration awarded to Nazi soldiers. So there will be the connection, the correlation between Nazis and conservatives and Republicans. So there's that. And there's going to be, well, we've had, of course, within minutes of this horrible shooting taking place, President Obama managed to find a microphone. And you know what struck me about this is that whenever there's a shooting like this where the president can tout his gun control agenda and anything else that he wishes to lecture the public on, that he wishes to lecture and wag his finger at the American people on, boy, does he manage to find a microphone pretty damn fast. But when there's a cop that's murdered, there's all you hear is crickets. There just doesn't ever seem to be a microphone around when that happens. Funny. What a coincidence, isn't it? But anyway, here is a little collection, a little montage of some of President Obama's comments following this shooting on yesterday. Let's listen.
As I said just a few months ago, and I said a few months before that, and I said each time we see one of these mass shootings, our thoughts and prayers are not enough. It's not enough. It does not capture the heartache and grief and anger that we should feel. The United States of America is the one advanced nation on earth in which we do not have sufficient common sense gun safety laws, even in the face of repeated mass killings. We are not the only country on earth that has people with mental illnesses or want to do harm to other people. We are the only advanced country on earth that sees these kinds of mass shootings every few months. Right now, I can imagine the press release is being cranked up. We need more guns, they'll argue. Fewer gun safety laws. Does anybody really believe that? Somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize. It is relevant to our common life together, to the body politic. This is a political choice that we make to allow this to happen every few months in America. We collectively are answerable to those families who lose their loved ones. Each time this happens, I'm going to bring this up. Each time this happens, I am going to say that we can actually do something about it, but we're going to have to change our laws. I hope and pray that I don't have to come out again during my tenure as president to offer my condolences to families in these circumstances. But based on my experience as president, I can't guarantee that.
You know, there are, first of all, the fact that he wasted absolutely no time in finding a microphone really, really fast and trotting out in front of it to say what he said. The fact that that he did it so quickly is just, it's quite frankly, it's disgusting. It's disturbing. And it shows that politics trumps all. His agenda is more important than anything else. His anti-gun agenda is more important than maybe giving the victims of this tragedy just a few minutes of respect and a few minutes of silence before he goes out and attempts to further that agenda. But a lot of what he said also too in this statement is just basically wrong. We are not the only civilized country who has shootings like this. There are others. There's other places that it has happened. He also, it wasn't in this particular clip, but he went on to say yesterday that some of the, because this is the beginning now, this is again, it's going to be another call for stricter gun laws, stricter gun control. Perhaps even, you know, the hardcore lefties are going to talk about gun confiscation. One of the things that he talked about yesterday, and like I said, it wasn't in this clip, was that the states that have the most strictest gun laws have the fewest gun crimes. That's absolutely not true, and there's statistics to bear that out. If you look at all you have to do, the closest statistic at hand is Barack Obama's state of Illinois and his home city of Chicago. Look at what happens every weekend in Chicago. There is murder upon murder upon murder. It's practically, I don't know that it is Washington, D.C., possibly right here in St. Louis could be not far behind. It's got to be a toss-up between several cities. Baltimore is another one of the murder capital of the United States right now. But Chicago's got to be in the running. I think I don't remember. I saw statistics for last weekend in Chicago, but it was, and I don't remember the number, forgive me, but it was up there. It was up there. And while you have this carnage, this slaughtering going on in places like Chicago every weekend, the state of Illinois has some of the strictest gun laws around. Another place comes to mind is New York State. You will spend a lot of time, put it that way, trying, if you desire to be a legal gun-owning citizen and you live in the state of New York, anybody that has gone through this process can probably attest to this, that if you would like to legally obtain a firearm in the state of New York, brace yourself for quite a long process because, and again, New York City is you know, under Rudy Giuliani, this really was kind of clamped down and taken care of. You know, the murder rate dropped pretty low, but now under Commie de Blasio, it's skyrocketed again. And again, here's statistics that bear this out, that what he said was absolutely not true, that the states with the strictest gun laws have the lowest gun crimes. It's simply not true. And, you know, for him to say that this is something that we should politicize, you know, I think that if this was, you know, it's something that has to do, and maybe this is going to sound kind of shady and not make a lot of sense, but if it's an issue like gun control and like the Second Amendment and things that conservatives care about, right away it should be politicized. But if it's something that liberals care about, no, you better stay away from that. Don't politicize that. And it's, you know, it's amusing. Maybe that's an odd word to use in a case like this. But, you know, the other thing that comes to mind when you are talking about things like this that happen, and again, it's my gosh, how many are we up to now? I've lost count. But you know, there's the mental health aspect of it too. There is, well, and even before I get to that, I'm getting ahead of myself. You know, while we're talking about guns and gun laws and gun control, how many of these places, I can rattle off several just off the top of my head right now, how many places where shootings like this have taken place and there's a big honking sign on the front door of wherever it is, and there's a big picture of a gun with a big red line through it and inside a big red circle, and what are the words underneath that? Gun-free zone. I can rattle off, not only in this case, was this community college a gun-free zone. So was the theater in Aurora, Colorado. So was the recruiting center in Tennessee. The list goes on and on. I'm sure maybe in the Sandy Hook case, that was also a gun-free zone. What more do we need? What more do we need to tell us, what more do liberals, what more do anti-gun zealots need to know that, hey, maybe gun-free zones don't work? Because what happens in a gun-free zone? Bad guys don't give a damn whether or not it's a gun-free zone. They're going to bring that gun in regardless. They're not following the law. Isn't that obvious? But on another angle, there's also the mental health aspect of this. Again, it's a story just like every single one of the other shooting stories that have taken place, shooting incidents, in that there's so many layers, it's like an onion. You can just keep peeling stuff back. And not only do you have the firearm aspect of this, but you also have the mental health aspect of it. Because, again, it's another case where there's a common thread in every single one of these cases. And the common thread is obviously mental illness. And why are all of these people falling through the cracks of our mental health system? Why is that happening? Why does it keep happening? Why, apparently no one seems to care enough. We're all so busy jumping up and down and yelling and screaming about gun laws and the lack of them, which there really isn't a lack of them. How about just enforce the laws that are on the books? We're so busy doing that we're really not taking a good hard look at our mental health system and why these people are falling through the cracks. The president gave it a little bit of lip service, and he briefly mentioned it, but it's part of this. It's a big part of this, and I think it's a much bigger part than it's important. Wouldn't it all go together with making sure that people who have mental issues and bad guys in general don't get guns? It's something that is not being talked about. It's like it's the elephant in the room, but it's going to have to be talked about. We're going to have to be not politically correct and talk about mental illness and talk about the people who suffer from mental illness and why are they falling through the cracks and managing to get their hands on these firearms. It's kind of just brings you at a loss for words. But another thing I'll share real quickly before I want to move on, because like I said, we got a whole bunch of other things to talk about here, that something I heard last night, and it's just a theory, just people kind of throwing stuff out there, but maybe it's something to think about. You know, every time that something like this happens, the president comes out and offers condolences to the family, lectures Americans on gun laws, and it's usually a typical 1-2-3 ABC kind of process. But try to put yourself just for a minute, I know it's hard, but try to put yourself just for a minute in the shoes of someone who is quite possibly maybe one of these people that you're kind of on the edge, you're kind of on the fringe, and you're ready to end it all on your own. You're ready to die yourself, and you've already decided that you're going to take a couple people out with you. But look what you get. Look at the benefit, for lack of a better word, that you get not only will I get my 15 minutes of fame, I'll get to off myself, which is what I want ultimately anyway. I'm going to get to take a few people with me when I do off myself. Plus, I'm going to get talked about, and I'm going to get mentioned, and I'm going to get focused on by the President of the United States. What's not for a nut job to love? Because every time it happens, he finds a microphone and talks about this obviously mentally deranged, mentally disturbed person who's committed this crime. So not only do you get to end your own life, which is what you want anyway if you're one of these people, you get to take a few people out with you, and you get mentioned and talked about by the President of the United States. What a package. What a nut job bonus package that is. But again, we're going to be hearing a lot more about what exactly went on here yesterday. We're going to hear about what sorts of evidence may be found in this person's apartment. We're going to find out motive. We're going to find out a lot of other things. And I think also keep in mind, because it's just beginning today, like I said, this is a report that was posted online just this morning by Fox News, was that someone found on a dating profile website that not only was organized religion one of this person's dislikes, but he described his political views as conservative and Republican. So here we go, folks. Get ready to roll, because this is what the mainstream media has been waiting for. This is what they have been chomping at the bit, for someone to commit one of these horrific crimes and claim that they are a conservative and a Republican. And you can bet your bottom dollar that the Oregon Tea Party website and lists of anyone who has ever been to a Tea Party gathering in the state of Oregon, well, you can imagine that it's all being gone over with fine-tooth comb. But I'm going to take a quick break here. We've got a lot more to get to. Of course, we're going to talk about Vladimir Putin and his spanking of Barack Obama and airstrikes in Syria right now. We've got Bill Clinton on the return of the vast right-wing conspiracy, only this time it's targeted at Hillary and her email issues, her email problems. We've got Donald Trump's tax plan, which is there's a lot of different views on it. We've got some potential new speakers of the House. And actually, I have another gun-related story here coming from a high school in Texas. But don't go anywhere. I've got all of that. We're going to try to get to it all today. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Long.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out with me on this beautiful, lovely, chilly first Friday of October. You know, I love October. Gee, I'm sure that's such a shock given my my witchy bent. But first Friday in October, it's a little chilly, but it is Friday, TGIF. The weekend is upon us, people. I know sometimes it gets a little iffy there along about Thursday, but, you know, here we are. Hope everybody has some great weekend plans happening. I know I do. But we've got a lot to get to today. We're talking about, of course, this horrible, again, another school shooting, this time at a small community college in Roseburg, Oregon, which is about 70 miles south of Eugene. And, of course, our thoughts and our prayers go out to the victims and to their families and to what they're going to endure, you know, for not just the next days, months, weeks, but for many who lost loved ones, their lives are changed forever. And we are thinking about them, and we hope that all of their friends and family and loved ones are around them and keeping them close today. But also in the news this week, of course, we have Russian troops in Syria now. And this is interesting because, you know, a lot of people look, and I'm guilty of this myself, a lot of people read articles and read accounts of what's going on in the Middle East, and sometimes it seems really, really complicated, and your eyes tend to glaze over. And, you know, like I said, I'm guilty of that at times too. But right now, basically, this is a report from Reuters, and it's from yesterday. Hundreds of Iranian troops have arrived in Syria to join a major ground offensive on behalf of President Bashar al-Assad's government. This is a further sign of rapid internationalism of a civil war in which every country in this region is going to have a stake. Russian warplanes bombed a camp that was run by rebels trained by the CIA, the group that is according to the group's commander. And this of course, puts Moscow and Washington on opposing sides for the first time since the Cold War has been over. And yesterday, the U.S. and Russian military officials were to hold talks yesterday morning. And so then you keep from shooting each other, basically. Isn't that a comforting thought? And Russia, meanwhile, said it would not join the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS in its current form. That is from RIA, which is a Russian news agency. Moscow has said that it has hit, the Russian government has said that it has hit some Islamic State positions, but the area where these targets were hit is held by a rival insurgent alliance, which, unlike Islamic State, is supported by U.S. allies, which include some Arab states and Turkey. And Hassan Haj Ali, head of the Liwa Sukor al-Jaba rebel group, told Reuters one of the targets was his group's base in Idlib province, and it was struck by 20 missiles on two separate sorties. His fighters had been trained by the CIA in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and this was part of a program that Washington says is aimed at supporting groups that oppose both Islamic State and Assad. The problem here is that, the goings-on, basically, is that the United States and our allies, of course, were opposing ISIS, and Washington says they're attempting to get rid of them. We keep seeing beheadings, and we keep seeing the kidnapping of Christians and the killing of Christians and innocents all over that region, so I'm not sure how that's working out for us, but we are also advocating that Assad needs to go in Syria, you know, if there's going to be any kind of peace, any kind of because he's part of the problem. He's a bad actor. And Moscow, of course, there's been a relationship between Russia and Syria for probably 30 years now. And Moscow is supporting Assad and thinks that his they believe that his government is a centerpiece of international efforts to fight Islamic extremism. Well, many are going to argue that he is fomenting and he is promoting these groups. But this report goes on to say it appears to be using the common campaign against Islamic State as a pretext to strike against troops supported by Washington and its allies as a way of defending a Damascus government with which, again, Moscow has allied since the Cold War. The Russian strikes represent a bold move by President Vladimir Putin to assert influence beyond his own neighborhood. It is the first time Moscow has ordered its forces to combat outside the frontiers of the former Soviet Union since the Afghanistan campaign of the 1980s. And what's going on here, basically, is that Vladimir Putin is saying, oh, yeah, sure, we're also targeting ISIS. But there's what they're saying and what they're doing are two different things. They're targeting a lot of U.S.-backed forces in Syria. And, you know, here's the thing, and I think that we have all noticed this about Vladimir Putin, and I'm going to try to put this in a family show kind of way. Well, let's just say that if you're Vladimir Putin, let's keep in mind that Vlad is a former KGB guy, and there's a saying that once you're a KGB guy, you're always a KGB guy. And I do not believe, and many others I think probably share this belief, that Vladimir Putin is in no way intimidated by Barack Obama and his flunkies. They are, in fact, I think it's probably just the opposite. They are a laughingstock, and he is no way threatened or intimidated by anything that we say we're gonna do, because 9 chances out of 10, it's not going to happen. And Vladimir Putin also, for all the people who like to who like to poo-poo nationalism, bottom line, Vladimir Putin is a nationalist through and through. He, as a former KGB guy, he wants to restore Russia to its former Soviet Union glory, only without the Soviet Union. Well, but with a lot of Soviet tendencies, shall we say. And I think what's going on here, and what a lot of other people who are way more expert on what's going on in the region, have way more expertise on it than I do, is that that Vladimir Putin really would like to make Russia the sole superpower in that region and really control what is going on there. And because, in fact, just yesterday, might have been the day before, that American forces were being told to get out, that our warplanes were being told to get out. And, you know, when does that happen? When has that in American history ever happened that Americans have been told, get out? And even if we're told get out, do we actually do it? I mean, the only thing, and this president and his administration fail to understand this, and I've probably said it time and time again, and other people have said it too, is that Vladimir Putin and the other bad actors in that region, you can include Assad, you can include include anybody you want, you can include Iran's President Rouhani. All of these people view diplomacy and view, can't we all just get along and can't we just sit down and talk about it? They view that as weakness. There's only one method of persuasion, shall we say. There's only one method of that they understand. And the United States right now looks very, very weak. And I don't see that. I don't see it, and probably a lot of other people don't see that changing anytime soon, at least not with this administration. And, we've got a year to go. We've got a year to go, and who knows what guys like Vladimir Putin and his buddies in that region you know, they have a whole year in which to enact things that they want to enact. And it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with, because they know there's no consequences. They know that nothing is going to happen to them because of whatever it is that they decide to do. And so right now the Russians are in Syria, and they are attacking they're attacking U.S.-backed forces in Syria right now. They're saying, oh yeah, we're fighting ISIS. That's it. We're helping to fight ISIS, but they're really targeting American-backed targets in Syria right now. So whether or not there's going to be some backlash for that is, we will see. But also going on this week, and there is going to be, I believe just yesterday, the day before, that the State Department, they announced that there were more of Hillary Clinton's emails that are going to be released. Since this is Friday, possibly next week, I guess. But poor Hillary. You know, it's yes, she's brought it on herself, but there's that vast right wing conspiracy that rears its ugly head every time a Clinton runs for office, and it's so not her fault. It wasn't Bill's fault either. It's that damned right wing conspiracy. But Hillary Clinton was on Meet the Press last Sunday, and she talked about this drip, drip, drip of information, and it's funny because it is a phrase that more than likely originated with Rush Limbaugh and the mainstream media, as they often do, took phrases and words that he uses and runs with them, but you would never know it, because they would in no way they would all rather cut off a limb than tell you that they have adopted a phrase from Rush. But she was asked, of course, being on Meet the Depressed. there's my Rush listener coming out in me. But on Meet the Press last week, she of course was thrown softballs, and she was asked if she could reassure nervous Democrats that no new email revelations with their campaign. And her quote was, quote, "I can't predict to you what the Republicans will come up with, because, of course, again, it's all of our fault, what sort of charges and claims they might make." And she went on to compare the criticism of the use of her private email server to all of the controversies that plagued Bill Clinton's presidency in the 90s. And another quote from Hillary was, quote, "I have been involved from the receiving side in a lot of these accusations. In fact, as you might remember, during the 90s, there were a bunch of them. All of them turned out to be not true." Really, all of them? Two words, Hillary. Monica Lewinsky. A few polling numbers here. This was from a Wall Street Journal NBC News poll. This would be from last Sunday, so it's actually fairly old, and these numbers could change, but the numbers are changing, but they're not changing in a good way for Hillary. Bernie Sanders there's only about a 7-point lead now between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. The numbers right here, according to this report, and again, this was a week ago, were 42% to 35%. And there's a new story about, of course, why the server was in her house. Hillary went on to say that the private server, it was already in the house. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. It was already in the house because Bill had set it up after leaving office. And, well, she just added her account to it because, well, it was just so much easier. Because it's so much easier than carrying two devices, and it's just so much easier. But we've also found out this week that there is evidence. I'm going to assume that this is probably FBI evidence, possibly, you know, I have a hard time believing it's Justice Department evidence, because I don't think that anybody right now really thinks that this Justice Department, is going to, well, they say they're paying attention to it, but, you know, I don't know. But there is some evidence that Russian hackers, there's the Russians again. There seems to be a theme here now, doesn't there? Russian hackers attempted to break into Hillary's server at least 5 times. There could be more. We don't know. But, of course, former President Bill Clinton went on to defend his wife, and as we would assume he would. And, you know, he knows all about the vast right-wing conspiracy. And this clip is a little bit long, but it's worth it. Here's what Bubba had to say on the vast right-wing conspiracy.
17 January. You're, some would say, the most skilled student of American politics. Why do you think Hillary Clinton is having a tougher time than many imagined? The lead in the national polls has narrowed. Iowa and New Hampshire seem tough.
Well, I think you know why. I think you know why. In 1992, I received a call. Before I started running for president, from the Bush White House, from a man I did, he said, "We've looked at the field. You're the only one that can win. The press has to have someone every election. We're going to give them you. You better not run." So all of a sudden, something nobody thought was an issue, Whitewater, that turned out never to be an issue, winds up being a $70 million investigation, and all the hammering happened, and you ask voters, do you really believe this? This amount, they think no. But do you trust him as much? No. There must be something. So this is just something that has been a regular feature of all of our presidential campaigns, except in 2008 for unique reasons. So ever since Watergate, something like this happens. And so I'd rather it happen now than later. And it was always going to happen. The other party doesn't want to run against her. And if they do, they'd like her as mangled up as possible. And they know that if they leak things and say things, that is catnip to the people who get bored talking about what's your position on student loan relief or dealing with the shortage of mental health care or what to do with the epidemic of prescription drugs and heroin out in America, even in small towns in rural America, or how are you going to get jobs in the coal country given how much they've lost in the last 20 years? So that just happens. It always happens. We're seeing history repeat itself. And I actually am amazed that she's borne up under it as well as she has. But I have never seen so much expended on so little. And, you know, the difference is now, you know, when it happened before, nobody knew anything about land in Arkansas, so I didn't have many defenders. There have been a shocking number of really reputable press people who have explained how you can't receive or transmit classified information, how the government has no central authority for classification, that defense, state, and the intelligence agencies have their own. I mean, there have been a lot of really fine things. It's just that they don't seem to show up on television very much, and it is what it is. But I think she, you know, she went out and did her interviews, said she was sorry that using her personal email caused all this confusion, and she'd like to give the election back to the American people. And I...
The president tended to ramble on there, I think, a little bit. But basically what he's saying is, poor us. This happens to us every time we try to run for office, every time we try to run for president. Those wascally Republicans come along and they catch on to something that we did that we really didn't think that we would get caught at, because, well, we're the Clintons, and why should we get caught? And then they just make a big deal out of nothing. That's all it is. And, you know, I have never – everyone has their general opinion about politicians, about how they seem to get away with so many things, and they break promises, and they do all these things, and people have just come to expect it, I guess. But, you know, the Clintons are – they are on a whole nother level. It's nothing is ever their fault. It's always the fault of Republicans, because they're so afraid and they're so intimidated by Hillary. Well, you know, I think if you listen to any of the top contenders, the top Republican contenders, they're, newsflash, Bubba, they're not afraid of Hillary. They're not afraid of Hillary at all. But it's never their fault. It's always, You know, they're always the victims of something. They're always the victim of some big, huge plot. And, you know, I mean, this is going to go on. It's going to go on until something happens with this, whether or not Hillary Clinton is indicted. You know, that's a whole other can of worms, a whole other ball of wax. But very quickly, moving on here, I'm just going to touch on a few things here very quickly. People are asking a lot for Donald Trump to come up with some specifics, because he's very good at personal attacks, but people were saying that they really had not heard a lot of specifics from him. He issued his tax plan this week. A lot of people are calling it Reagan-esque. A lot of people are calling it unrealistic, that it would put the country in even more debt. But basically what's going on here, he would drop the top income tax rate from 39.6% to 25%, and the top corporate rate from 35% to 15%, which actually does need to be done. The United States has the highest corporate tax rate in the world. So if you're going to start a business, do you really want to start it here? But he would eliminate income taxes entirely for households earning $50,000 a year or less, and reduce rates to 10% for households earning $100,000 or less. He would also eliminate taxes on inherited wealth and reduce them for investment income. He would create a 15% rate for small business owners and freelance workers. Early analysis from outside groups, this is from the Washington Post, suggests that the plan would add trillions of dollars to the federal debt unless it unleashes enormous growth. Trump estimated that growth could reach as much as 6% a year, a number most economists dismiss as implausible for a sustained growth rate, or is paired with deep cuts to government spending. Trump says the plan would begin reducing the deficit after 3 years, a claim many analysts disputed immediately. Grover Norquist, who is the president of Americans for Tax Reform, his quote on this was, quote, "This is dead center Reagan Republican tax thinking. If you put the Trump plan up for a vote in the House and Senate, every Republican would support it." Well, that remains to be seen. But so that is Trump's tax plan. Some like it, some hate it. Very quickly, here, the other gun story I referred to, this is a report from Newsmax from Wednesday of this week. A Texas high school sparked a furor by saving students' questionnaires asking if and why their family owned guns and about the political affiliations of their parents. I'm sorry, this is a Newsmax report. They got this from the Daily Caller. The Hawk 2015 gun survey was handed out to 100 students in a journalism class at Hendrickson High School in Pflugerville, a suburb of Austin, in a bid to start a conversation about the Second Amendment. It did, but not the way the school expected. Parents and Second Amendment scholars quickly called the questionnaire invasive of students' rights. Talk show host Michael Cargill, who first reported on the questionnaire on his radio program, told the blog Infowars.com, "The Second Amendment is a great conversation for kids to have in the classroom and definitely for journalism because it applies directly to our Constitution. But the questions that concern me are the ones that ask, how many firearms does your parents have at home, and what political affiliations do your parents have? That's private." The Daily Caller quoted one parent as saying the school principal was, quote, "very concerned about some of the questions that were in it." So, again, here we go. It's all part of an agenda. And if I were a parent of a child in that school district, I would be in the school office in no time flat, because I think a lot of other parents are probably thinking the same way about that. That it's just another in the baby steps against guns and against gun owners. And I don't think people in Texas are going to take that lying down. But very quickly, before I get out of here. You can now have Christmas dinner at Hogwarts Castle. Let's see. No muggle will be able to experience the Christmas feast at Hogwarts students indulged in each holiday, but soon you might be able to do the next best thing. This December 3rd, a lucky few aspiring witches and wizards will be able to dine at the legendary Great Hall at Warner Brothers Leavesden UK Studios. This means fans will be able to sit on the very same benches as the likes of Daniel Radcliffe and Matthew Lewis. When the event starts at 6 p.m., guests will arrive on a shuttle train and be offered drinks and canapes, such an ugly American, before finding their seats in the dining hall decked out in original props used in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, like the flaming Christmas pudding and ham studded with cherries. There, the attendees will enjoy a two-course meal packed with entrees like roast turkey, ham hock, and confit pear. After dinner, the wizard wannabes can take a stroll around the set and enjoy festive dessert bowls on platform 9 3/4 and a cup of butter beer at the cafe. The evening is then concluded with some dancing, and guests are sent home with a magical parting gift, a wand from the Hogwarts student of their choosing. Some options are Harry Potter, Hermione Granger, Ron Weasley, Professor Dumbledore, and Lord Voldemort. While this sounds like any Harry Potter fan's dream, tickets are limited and not cheap. You can read more information and book your tickets here for £230, which is roughly $349. So I thought that was, even though it was talking about Christmas, I thought it was a lovely little Halloween-y type story, you know, Harry Potter and Hogwarts Castle. But on that note, I am out of here. I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me today. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. You will find all sorts of cool things there. Please go to theblacksphere.net, not only myself who have writings there, but lots of wonderfully talented, awesome people like Kevin Jackson and many others who have their thoughts there as well. So please go there, theblacksphere.net. Facebook.com/BeckyNoble and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Thank you all for joining me today. Have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time. It is Friday, isn't it? See you next time.
Stand up.